You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, kind of a lot has happened since we were together a week ago this evening. Welcome to tonight's live broadcast. My, how things can change in a week. It is Saturday, October the 6th. So that's the first thing. Last time we were together, it was September, so we've got a new month at least. October 6th, here we are, James Edwards, Keith Alexander in the studio tonight. And let me give you a preview of some of the things to come this evening. Last week, about the time we were wrapping up, Saturday Night Live on NBC was just getting started, and they did a feature segment, a skit, on the League of the South. And we're going to play that clip for you, and we're going to get Dr. Michael Hill's response to the Saturday Night Live effort there, if you will, and that's coming up later in the second hour. And also, Brett Kavanaugh is the newest member of the Supreme Court. Who would have thunk it? And that just happened earlier today. We're going to update you on that as well. And I was going to lead off with the League of the South and the Saturday Night Live thing, and I'll tell you why. I think it's a pretty big deal. I mean, that's a pretty big audience. I think it has over a million views, just their YouTube clip of it. So we are going to talk about that, but I remembered what week it was, and I remembered what Monday is, and that is Columbus Day. So what we're going to do here, and this may be the only AM radio program that does it, I bet Sam Bushman will do it on Monday if I know Sam like I think I do. But we are going to honor, first and foremost, right out of the gate tonight, before we get to Kavanaugh, before we get to the League of the South and Saturday Night Live, before we get to the rest of another busy show, we are going to honor and celebrate Christopher Columbus and European discovery and exploration around the world. And obviously, he is an iconic figure in that age of exploration. I guess you could say he kicked it off. He kicked off what is known as the age of exploration. The bravery, the heroism, the daunting feat. It really just goes to the core, to the marrow of the bone of what Western man is. That indomitable spirit to scale the next peak and to sail beyond the horizon. Uniquely European. Columbus Day on Monday. And Keith, we had some years ago a political cesspool listener, loyal fan of TPC by the name of Blowtorch Mason. I only wish my parents had been thoughtful enough to give me a name like Blowtorch. But he wrote an article for us on Columbus Day, and I know you've got that thing nearly memorized because we run it every year. We're going to run it again on Monday. Break down that article and tell the audience, remind the audience why we want to start tonight's show, as busy as it is, with the commemoration and the honor bestowed upon one Christopher Columbus.
Well, Christopher
Hang
Columbus.
On, hang on. Let me make sure that's on. Is that on? It is now, right up to the mouth, and here we go.
Okay, well, Christopher Columbus and Columbus Day was, at least during my childhood, kind of a ubiquitous holiday. You really didn't know what it was about, but as we reach adulthood and start considering things more closely, it's quite obvious that Columbus Day was to celebrate the advent of Europeans coming to the new continents of North and South America. This is what put North and South America into the world, for all intents and purposes. Other than, you know, before Columbus's discovery of the so-called New World, the New World didn't exist, for all intents and purposes, to the rest of the world. There had always been contact with Asia and China, at least since Roman times, but the New World was totally unknown. There have been hypotheses about Vikings coming over and other groups possibly coming over, but that was lost history. The real history, the historical significance of the New World, North and South America, began when Christopher Columbus discovered these continents, and it led to the colonization of the areas, and it was primarily the Spanish in South America and the English in North America, all together with the French and the Dutch and other groups. But that is what really opened up the New World. And it also, I think, showed, demonstrated in practical fashion, just what the mettle of European peoples were. Because the people that came to America, both North and South, from Spain and from, particularly in England, in North America, were not, as your grandmother would say, from the top dresser drawer. They were from the bottom of the barrel in the societies they came from. In fact, one of the purposes served by the New World was as a dumping ground for, one, religious crackpots, that would be like the Massachusetts Bay Colony, and two, for prisoners, like the colony in Georgia. But these people that were supposedly at the very bottom of European society, when they came to a new world that had a lot of fertile land and they had rid themselves somewhat of the shackles of the class system that existed in Europe at the time, they proved that they could turn these lands, these totally undeveloped lands, into a garden spot, into the most productive parts of the world. Same thing for Australia. Australia was a prison colony. If you, you know, read Dickens's Hard Times, you'll find out about the prisoner that was sent there, and then he came back a wealthy man, but he really wasn't supposed to be in England and whatnot because he had been banished to Australia. This is the ultimate testament to the quality of European humanity. The fact that they, you could take the very bottom of the barrel of strata in society in Europe, transplant them into a new world, and they would not only survive, they would prosper and thrive and turn this new world into the most productive part of the globe. What do you say about that, James?
Well, I appreciate it, and that is one of the reasons why we celebrate Columbus. He is a symbol of that identity, that of that spirit of our people. And I would direct you to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, on Monday and Tuesday, we're going to have a couple of articles commemorating. I have always been so fascinated. I know I've said this before, and I was actually down earlier this year in South America, in Belize, or rather not South America, Central America, Belize, Mexico and Honduras, and Columbus, I think, skirted by Honduras during one of the voyages, and I've just always been so fascinated by that age of exploration. I think surely one of the most incredible moments in the history of the world was when there was that first contact, not just of Columbus, certainly, but I think of Cortez and Montezuma meeting on that causeway there.
Sir Francis Drake, you know, the Seahawk, things like that movie with Errol Flynn that Winston Churchill liked so much, the Seahawk. These guys just getting in these little boats, and they had the skill as sailors to sail all those great distances with precision to where they could land on specific islands.
They changed the world. They bettered the world. They were men of distinction, men of bravery, men of heroism, men who conquered all comers. And they are the men that we should be honoring, and that is why TPC is doing so tonight. Right out of the gates, we're going to do another segment on Columbus. We're going to get to Kavanaugh, Dr. Michael Hill, and much, much more tonight. We're just getting started. I'm a little hoarse, but no worse for the wear. The show must go on. Stay tuned.
Each week, the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today.
We fought, we learned, we struggled, we won. Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
So, you two are real actors, huh?
Well, I was an extra on a soap opera for 3 years.
And I'm best known for starring in cat food commercials. Meow.
And you're going to play our parents for how long?
Oh, just during dinner for the next few years, probably until you're both off to college. Your real parents will be back every night at 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock?
Hey, your dad's busy. He's got work, softball, client functions.
Yeah, and your mom, she's got the literary club and play rehearsals. So.
Don't you worry. They'll be back on time.
Otherwise, we get time and a half.
Ka-ching! Okay, according to the script, we're supposed to ask you how your day was.
Yes.
Okay, I guess.
Ooh, is that the best you can do?
I think I want my real parents.
I don't see that in the script.
No ad-libbing, please.
There's no substitute for a loving parent. And when you're really there, you'll know how much you care. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, for more tips on strengthening your family, visit family.mormon.org.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Okay, folks, so we're talking to you about Christopher Columbus. We're doing that right out of the gates, and there is there's of course a reason for that. I wanted to come out and just be the first thing we talked about tonight, even with so much going on in our movement and in Washington this week. Christopher Columbus, we remember our heroes, we remember our dead. And there's an article that we want to direct you to, but that will post on Monday at TPC's website. Got a couple of paragraphs here that I've lifted that gives a little bit more about the history. I'd like to read them for you, then we'll toss it back over to Keith for commentary. Keith, I'll give you the high sign when I'm done. But this is why Columbus does deserve to be honored. Contrary to what we've been told, Europeans in 1492 realized that the world was round, but the Atlantic Ocean was thought to extend for over 12,000 miles, so no attempt to sail it was attempted. The spice trade to the Orient was the main motivation to find new routes by sea to the Far East. The Ottoman Turks conquered Constantinople in 1453, and the easy overland routes to the east were blocked. The Portuguese found a sea route to the east going around Africa. It was at this time that Columbus convinced the Spanish to try to find a direct sea route to Asia by going west. After a voyage of more than 2 months, Columbus landed on San Salvador Island in the Bahamas October 12, 1492. One source notes, quote, Washington Irving's 1828 biography of Columbus was popularized the idea that Columbus had difficulty obtaining support for his plan because Europeans thought that the earth was flat. In fact, the primitive maritime navigation of the time relied on the stars and the curvature of the spherical earth. The knowledge that the earth was spherical was widespread, and the means of calculating its diameter was known to both scholars and navigators. Eventually, the net result was that Columbus estimated that Japan was only 2,400 miles away instead of 12,200. Instead of finding a new route for the spice trade to the east, Columbus discovered a whole new world rich with gold and tobacco. Of the world's four largest food crops, rice, wheat, corn, and the potato, the last two, corn and the potato, came from the new world. The Spanish set out an expedition to circle the world in 1519 under Ferdinand Magellan, completing what Columbus had originally set out to do, reaching the Orient by sailing west. The voyage by Columbus established that ships of that time could sail thousands of miles across an open ocean. On his second voyage, Columbus brought sugarcane plants to the Caribbean, which started a highly profitable sugar trade. Columbus proved there was a place where ships could resupply on a westward voyage between Europe and Japan. The discovery of the New World led to the construction of bigger, better ships that could more easily sail across the ocean and carry out trade over thousands of miles. In recent decades, whiny liberals have done their best to try to demonize Columbus and white people in general. They cite the early slave trade, forgetting that slavery had existed for thousands of years and that Europeans would eventually outlaw slavery. Liberals and their media give virtually no credit to the Spanish for bringing Christianity to the New World. Every place the Spaniards went, they stopped human sacrifices, cannibalism, and the other brutal practices of the natives. Apparently, liberals consider this to be a negative. The self-righteous liberals only seem to value things like gay sex and smoking pot. Saving someone's soul apparently doesn't count as the most important accomplishment that could ever be done in the liberal worldview. Almost done here, Keith. Columbus left 39 men behind at Fort Christmas, founding the settlement of La Navidad in Hispaniola, present-day Haiti. The Indians there slaughtered all of them, and just about every liberal-made TV documentary assumes that the 39 Spanish left behind were antagonizing and mistreating the enemies, the Indians. If you were heavily outnumbered and left behind, would you risk antagonizing the Indians? We should not join the liberals and immediately assume that the whites were the guilty party here. The only crime that we know of for certain is that the earliest encounter with the New World, was committed by the Indians, their earliest account of genocide of the New World, against the Spanish, and it was mass murder. The natives saw an opportunity to kill the Spanish and steal their possessions, and that's exactly what they did. When Columbus returned with a force of 1,200 men, some of the Indians were enslaved in retaliation for their massacre of the Spaniards. Columbus deserves to be remembered and honored for being the greatest explorer of all time and for beginning the European settlement of America that led to the creation of the United States. Important new crops like corn and potatoes were brought back to Europe. Christianity was introduced to the natives and human sacrifice was abolished. Present-day Indians enjoy the advantages of a modern society and have grown rich off of casinos. Columbus does deserve to have a holiday in his honor. If you complain that there are too many holidays, we can always get rid of Martin Luther King Day. Keith?
Well, see, that's the point. The point is that European civilization, white civilization, if you will, was so far superior to the indigenous civilization. In fact, it really doesn't deserve to be called by the name of civilization in the New World and in sub-Saharan Africa. In both places, the indigenous population had not even invented the wheel or discovered the you know, technological advance of a wheel in their own locales without having contact with Europe. Furthermore, in sub-Saharan Africa, it had never occurred to anyone in the indigenous population to put a sail on a boat to help propel it. The highest level of civilization in the New World was the Aztecs, who were bloodthirsty conquerors of all of their neighboring tribes. They would capture young men from the tribes for ritual sacrifice, and they would have their priests rip the still beating hearts out of their victims. The Aztecs were so hated by the neighboring tribes that when the Europeans under Cortez arrived, the native, the other tribes were so anxious to join somebody that or some force that had a chance to defeat the Aztecs that they flocked to their standard. Now, this is not, you know, there's no comparison of the two civilizations. When you try to do that, this shows you the intellectual and moral bankruptcy of areas of study like anthropology that try to tell you that these primitive cultures were very advanced, actually, and that we have much to learn from them. No, they had much to learn from us, and that's the long and the short of it, folks. We brought civilization, we brought industry. When Columbus and Europeans first came to the New World, it was basically a big wildlife reserve. Liberal revisionist historians have been trying to slowly increase the numbers of the native people in North America and South America to serve their purposes, but, you know, it could be a number as small as half a million. It might be several million, but at any rate, the land was so sparsely populated, it was basically a big wildlife preserve. and the people were stuck in the new Stone Age until people from Europe came by and basically turned the desert and turned the wilderness into an Eden of productivity. This, you know, it's so incredible that the people that are primarily criticizing the white people from Europe that came to the New World and to Africa are white people themselves. They remind me of Robert Frost's definition of a liberal. A liberal is a person, according to Robert Frost, that can't take their own side in an argument. Well, that's exactly what we have with white liberals who want to try to tear down the magnificent edifice and the tremendous history that our forefathers and ancestors have, and the great patrimony that they've given to us of these lands. Whenever white rule has ended in places like sub-Saharan Africa, you see the standard of civilization reverting to form. It's, you know, Rhodesia in sub-Saharan Africa under white rule was called the breadbasket of Africa when the whites were driven out with the complicity of Europe and America. It became Zimbabwe, the basket case of Africa. They are in desperate straits. It's a totally mismanaged economy. That's what would happen to all of these areas if they had remained untouched by European settlers.
And look at Haiti now. I mean, we just talked about Columbus's landing on the present-day Haiti. Look at what Haiti has done with itself.
Well, Haiti was the most prosperous colony in the New World. It's called the Jewel of the Caribbean until they ran out the whites.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Can a nation conceived in liberty carry its head high if it denies protection to the youngest and most vulnerable of its citizens? Can a country founded on God-given rights continue to thrive without understanding that life is a precious gift from our Creator? As a physician, I have looked into the eyes of one-pound babies. I have cradled their small bodies in the palm of one hand. I defy those who are careless, who would disregard life and look at these tiny little miracles and say, we're not going to protect that.
But I believe there will come a time when we are all judged on whether or not we took a stand in defense of all life from the moment of conception until our last natural breath. One thing I promise you, I will always take a stand for life.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
I'm Michael Hill, President of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern Nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C. and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, folks, we're about to transition into our second topic of the evening, but of course, on the eve of Columbus Day, we once again see trotted out all of these proclamations, and the latest of which that I'm looking at right now, the city of Cincinnati, Ohio, has proclaimed Monday to be Indigenous Peoples Day. Now, that's been a fad that's been sort of accelerating the last few years. It could be either or. You could celebrate Columbus Day or Indigenous Peoples Day, depending on your preference or your level of sanity. And even on my iPhone, it has them both listed. But in the city of Cincinnati, you can't even choose anymore. It is just Indigenous Peoples Day, according to the local government there. So, Keith, tell the audience why that is foolish, if not nonsensical, and why you personally honor Christopher Columbus and all those like him.
Well, the left is always trying to revise history. Revisionist history, it's called. But they're putting the bottom rung on top and taking the top rung and throwing it out the window. There's no comparison with the rich and illuminating history of Western man coming to the rest of the world and bringing the blessings of modernity to the rest of the world, and trying to equate that with the new Stone Age existence, for example, of the native Indians in America or the natives in Africa is, you know, absurd. It's so counterintuitive that I don't understand how anybody can't see through it. It's just, and there are so many white liberals that are willing to jettison their heritage and disrespect their ancestors, but on the other hand, you know, they really don't have any affection for the people that they are promoting. It's like Joe Sobrin said, getting a college education is about learning all the proper politically correct attitudes towards non-white people, and also having the wherewithal to earn enough money to live as far away from them as possible, which is what happens with white liberals. They are so hypocritical that, you know, it's like the emperor's new clothes. And trying to, replace Columbus Day, which really should be celebrated by all people. If you like living in the United States, if you don't want to return, for example, to sub-Saharan Africa, and I don't know of anybody that does, then you should be celebrating Columbus Day, because that's the reason we have the civilization that we have to enjoy here, not only in America, but in the rest of the world. Cell phones, for example. I don't think that the indigenous people of America or Africa would have discovered cell phones by now if they'd been left to their own devices.
Well, yeah, if we're going to go into the number of technological and medicinal advancements that have come from the hearts and minds and spirit of our people, it's going to be a long show. But you're right, and that's just another reason to celebrate our people. And so we celebrate our people this weekend, and we remember Christopher Columbus. Now, during the first hour of each of the last two shows, we dedicated the opening hour last week and week before last to the ongoing drama that was unfolding during the Brett Kavanaugh confirmation hearings. And lo and behold, today the man was confirmed, and he will be your newest member of the United States Supreme Court. Now, as I have said in each of those last 2 weeks, Kavanaugh may not be our guy, but I am thrilled to see the lunatic Me Too malcontents be defeated on this one. The biggest problem I had in the whole charade was that they were taken seriously at all, as if that this may have been a legitimate gripe or that there could have been any validity to the lies that were being told. The fact that they gave this so much credence and wrung their hands over the decision-making before finally doing what was right is a little disconcerting. But for once, maybe for the first time in my life, Keith, and I'm not trying to be cute here, but this may be the first time in my life that the Republicans actually delivered something substantial.
Well, this may be a watershed moment, and the left really stepped in it because they have managed to alienate most of the people of the United States, the voting electorate, right before the midterm elections, which they were counting on winning. I think the whole issue of who will get a net gain, the Republicans or the Democrats, in the midterm elections that are coming up on November the 6th, is now totally up in the air at best for the left, and probably has shifted to the Republicans. They'll probably gain positions. But the left really didn't have any choice, because what Kavanaugh does is challenge their hegemony over the federal judiciary, particularly the Supreme Court, which has been their secret weapon for 65 years now, since 1953, when Earl Warren ascended to become Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. It was his nomination and confirmation basically began the era of a judicial oligarchy running America, telling people by discovering spurious constitutional rights, like the hidden in the Ninth Amendment was a right to an abortion, or for example, saying that segregated schools was against the 14th Amendment, when it was quite obvious that it wasn't, because the same Congress that passed the 14th Amendment governed Washington, D.C. back right after the Civil War, and they instituted a racially segregated public school system in the District of Columbia at the very same time. So all of this, you know, basically elaborate fancy lying that has been done by the Supreme Court since 1953 now is in jeopardy. At the very least, there won't be more changes. Whether the people on the Supreme Court will have the courage and the honesty to say that cases like Roe versus Wade were not legitimate decisions because they departed radically from the accepted standard for judicial review, which is stare decisis. In other words, you look for a precedent in the past dealing with the same or a similar subject, and that controls. Well, every innovation that has been accomplished in American life through the Supreme Court over the past 65 years was a radical departure, basically an ignoring of stare decisis from the Brown decision on forward. And now the left has lost its ace in the hole, which is the power of judicial review. Whenever they can't get what they want passed into law through the legislature or through the executive branch, they resort to the liberal federal judicial system, and that's what they did, for example, recently regarding gay marriage. You know, you had 31 states have referendums, 31 states turned it down, said that we don't want it. Well, then what did they do? They went to Old Reliable, the power of judicial review. They selected, they did some what is called forum shopping, found a very liberal gay federal judge in San Francisco, a district court judge, who found that it was there's hidden in the Constitution a right for gays to have marriages, and that they had to be recognized by the state as being the equivalent of the traditional marriage. Then it gets appealed to the Ninth Circuit, which is where California is, and among other Western states, and it gets confirmed, and then it goes to the U.S. Supreme Court with a presumption of correctness, and it passes narrowly. And that's been, you know, the tried and true method so that the 3% in America could rule and make changes in society that were unacceptable to the other 97%. That's what has been going on ever since 1954 with the Brown decision. And now, for the first time, we have ostensibly a conservative majority. Now, how conservative they'll prove to be is, you know, the big surprise package. In the past, even though you had more Republican presidencies than you had Democratic presidencies over this 65-year period, the Republicans, I don't know, through incompetence or through collusion, appointed new Supreme Court justices that were ostensibly conservative that turned out to be flaming liberals, people like John Paul Stevens, people like Lewis Powell, people like Harry Blackmun, who was appointed by Nixon as a conservative, but wound up within a couple of years being the author of the Roe versus Wade decision.
We're going to hold Keith up right there, and we're going to come back with another segment on this before we get to our featured guests of the evening. That's coming up at the second hour, and much more to come even in the third. Stay tuned. We're celebrating Columbus Day and the defeat of Me Too on the Supreme Court today. We'll be right back.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Getting the kids to school, cleaning the house, doing the laundry. It seems that the work routine as a stay-at-home mom is never ending. And even though I'm the prime grocery shopper in our family of four, I simply don't have time to scrutinize all the labels on the countless food products I buy. Oh, sure, I've noticed all the latest certification seals. Organic, non-GMO, gluten-free. It definitely seems to be the latest craze. But it was only recently that kosher certification seals caught my attention. You see, my husband had me download an app called Kosertify, and it shed light on a century-old certification industry that slipped under the radar screen from the majority of our public. I also noticed a question mark at the end of the app name, and that makes great sense as there's far more questions regarding this industry than answers. In fact, the developers refer to this as the kosher question. Sure, I'm a busy mom and didn't pay attention to our food culture, but now I have transparency, a convenient grocery list feature, and the ability to eat in favor of my family's best interests, and you can discover it too at thekosherquestion.com.
Attention Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's LibertyNewsRadio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-7777. 6397.
All right. You know, again, from time to time, even after all these years of working with Keith, I sometimes just sit back here in the studio in my chair and just marvel as he riffs off one of these commentaries. Isn't he fantastic, ladies and gentlemen? And doing a lot of heavy lifting for me tonight as my voice is beginning to fail me. A voice is a pretty important commodity for a talk radio show host. But nevertheless, we are talking about Brett Kavanaugh and his ascension to the United States Supreme Court. I have got Keith, by the way, your commentary in that last segment was much more profound than my reaction to all this thing. You've really thought deeply into this. I was just marveling at how delicious the tears of the left are tasting right now. I get drunk on their tears. You know, half of Hollywood's moving to Canada. Anytime something doesn't go their way, they're always going to move to Canada, but they never actually leave. These are very tasty.
Well, it is a real change now because the left's control of the Supreme Court has been the foundation for the triumph of liberalism since the Brown versus Topeka Board of Education decision. If it had not been for that particular stratagem, farming your decision out to the federal court system and then having the Supreme Court discover, lo and behold, a new constitutional right, then none of this really would have advanced. The fact, even when they get what they want in the legislature through the executive, it's basically with the implicit threat that they will, if they don't get the relief they want at these other branches of government, they can go to the federal court and get it done that way. So, you know, what has happened with Trump is that the Federalist Society came up with a list. He is following that list. That list is lists of people who fall into the originalist camp of constitutional interpretation. And, of course, the founding fathers, they are the originals, would never have countenanced something like gay marriage or abortion, for example, as being constitutional rights. In fact, they're spinning in their graves at the very thought of that. So, you know, common sense may take over the Supreme Court. Unfortunately, I don't want to give stare decisis power to things like the Topeka Brown decision or Roe versus Wade or any number of other liberal decisions that were rank and radical departures from stare decisis.
I only could hope that the Trump court, as it were, would be that radical. I don't think they'll do anything as radical as the left did with Brown. I do hope, though, that Kavanaugh was radicalized during this process. I hope that he understands what Jared Taylor said this week, is that is, we are all Brett Kavanaugh now. I hope he understands that. But yeah. I gotta read this, Keith. I've got to read this because I want to get your response to it. Okay. Now, I found this just a few minutes before the show. I was just Googling to see how the media was responding to Kavanaugh's confirmation. How about this from the USA Today? Here's the headline. With Brett Kavanaugh confirmed, Trump's poison infects the Supreme Court. Now, how's that for an unbiased headline from your controlled press, from your lying press? Well, with Brett Kavanaugh confirmed, Trump's poison touch infects the Supreme Court. It gets better. Let me read this very quickly, and it'll be short. The confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh, this is the USA Today, a couple of hours ago, if you're listening to this live. The confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh after a bitter fortnight of intensity is the most damaging blow to the Supreme Court since it decided a potential a presidential election with the Bush versus Gore decision. Now listen to this. The episode was a vivid display of a broken process driven by ward boss power politics. Senate Republicans employed a razor-thin majority representing a minority of Americans to create new rules and game the system at every turn, because the liberals don't do
that. That's what they did at Brown.
Listen, exactly. Starting with their refusal on the principle of because we say so to provide the great bulk of Kavanaugh's government records once Christine Blasey Ford emerged to credibly accuse Kavanaugh of sexual assault.
Incredibly accused.
When they were teens, Republicans excluded important witnesses and by design turned a final hearing into a he said, she said standoff. Now listen, it gets even better. Among the indelible images of that standoff were 11 white Republican males hiding behind their hand-picked prosecutor as she served up questions to Ford and Kavanaugh's face as he unleashed a torrent of bare-teeth partisanship.
Well, see, what this shows, James, is just exactly why I've always said Trump's going to have to let the moths fly out of his wallet or his purse and buy one of the networks, or have his friends buy one of the networks. Because right now there is no major network that is around to counteract this, you know, one-sided torrent of misinformation from the what we call the legacy media: CNN, ABC, CBS, ABC, PBS, MSNBC. There's only Fox News, and they are half-hearted supporters of Trump. I would say over half of their commentators were at some point or another since he came down the escalator back in the summer of 2015, never Trumpers. So consequently, he's going to have to do something about this one-sided misinformation that passes for news commentary in America.
Well, listen to this. This is the end of that article. Again, this is the USA Today with a very unbiased headline. With Brett Kavanaugh confirmed, Trump's poison touch infects the Supreme Court. There's a subheader to this article entitled Trump's Poison Now Soils the Court. They actually put that in there twice because they wanted to make sure you know that he's a poison. But listen to this. The keenest tragedy of Kavanaugh's sordid confirmation is its effect on the court itself. Its public credibility is everything. In a sense, it's all the court has. Justice Stephen Breyer referred to it as the miracle of national compliance with the court's edicts, even in the wake of controversial
decisions.
Miracle
they have complied with them.
But like Bush versus Gore. The American people accept the court's decisions, particularly those in controversial cases, only to the extent that they believe them to be the product of law, not politics. That's the line for the pit of hell. Who is this guy? Listen, between Kavanaugh's arch-partisan turn to gain confirmation and the raw political process that won it for him, the court's legitimacy will now be challenged. It had been challenged before. Now this is a pretty
far. It should have been challenged.
And through no act of its own, the court has no real right to replenish its institutional capital except to discharge its work honorably over time. But now every four decision in which Kavanaugh joins, and there will be a cascade of them, will seem to many more Americans illegitimate and politically driven, and that much harder to swallow. Given the extreme bitterness of the confirmation, it's hard to see that changing soon. Last sentence here. Trump has managed to insert himself and his signature brand of contempt and malice into the most important institution in American government that he had not yet soiled.
Well, let me tell you, this is the one thing that had to be changed before there can be any real meaningful change. What they are describing is exactly what was departed from with the Brown decision. Even the New York Times, the day after the Brown decision was handed down on May the 17th, 1954, Black Monday as it was called, they said this was a decision based on sociology and the hearts of men rather than the law. Well, that should have shown you that even back then, the New York Times, and which was the flagship of the liberal press even back then, realized the illegitimacy of that decision and all the other liberal decisions that have flowed from it. Now, rather than being poisoned into the system, Trump's influence has been like penicillin to a body racked with infection. Hopefully, the penicillin will be strong enough to purge some of this stuff from our system. But, you know, the changes that have been wrought and thrust upon the American people by the Supreme Court over the last 65 years represent the biggest power grab and the biggest illegitimate transformation of a society that has happened probably in the history of mankind peacefully. And why did people agree to it? They said, well, if the Supreme Court says it, it must be true, or there must be some basis for it. People have now come to the conclusion, in fact, they've come to the conclusion years ago, that this is a bunch of hogwash, that there's nothing legitimate about these liberal Supreme Court decisions that transform our society and our lives. Just think, for example, of the great expense that has been thrust upon parents that have to take their children out of now dangerous public schools because of the Brown decision. Think about, the reduction in our population that has occurred because of the Roe versus Wade decision. There are so many changes that have been thrust upon American society which have diminished American society and diminished our life and our civilization as a result of the U.S. Supreme Court, that all we can do is hope that these originalist justices can hold forth. we need to make sure that the Republicans win the election, and they need to make somebody like Murkowski, the maverick Alaskan Republican senator that voted against Kavanaugh, walk the plank. He needs to win the 2020 election, and we need as much of Trump as we can possibly get, and hopefully the societal temperature will stabilize on the conservative side, and we can get some real conservatives in there, like a Pat Buchanan, for example, as president rather than Trump.
Well, we're getting a lot of emails about this. Listener Tom writes, James and Keith, if it were not for two white Protestant men, Donald Trump and Mike Pence, Catholic Kavanaugh would have never been on SCOTUS. That's a fact. Well, you're probably right about that.
Absolutely.
And that's what we're talking about. Yeah. I only hope that the Trump court will be as hard right as the media pretends to fear them to be.
You know, isn't it ironic that the white Irish Catholic guy is now the WASP, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. He is now the great enemy and the secret hand that runs American society, according to the left.
Thank you, Keith, for your work tonight. We'll see you next week. Second and third hour for everyone else, still coming up. Stay tuned.
The political cesspool is in the can, but don't go away. There's more to come right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.